Everybody's falling asleep.
Ability to do this with data and visualize it.
one, and I showed this in Brent's class last year. This is, I don't think he's done a more recent one. This is reversing the connections when Amazon recommends you books. And these are political books. And there's plenty of, there's a left wing, I mean, by convention, seemingly in the 2000 election, blue came to mean Democratic and red came to mean Republican, which had not happened previously. That election led to that level, like red and blue America. So the notion here is red America is books read by the Republicans or conservatives. Blue is books read by Democrats or liberals. Purple books are the books that span that gap. And, as Nona says, you can take the visualization up for granted and get interested in it. The other interesting point I think to make with this particular visualization is that the connections in a network don't necessarily need to be activated by the nodes, right? The books are not connecting to one another. What's being read here is actually traces of human interest. The books are just lying, as books do. The overview is the kind of edit. Something else. Someone asked me the question in Red's class last year. I didn't have an answer at the time, which is, what does this look like for other countries? Right? What does this look like in France? What does this look like in India? And I wrote Bells at the time. He said, I don't have an answer for you yet, but I will. I didn't get the answer back until the end of the semester. But the answer is, other countries don't have as polarized political culture as we do. And he has not, in fact, been able to find any place else that has this same harvest factor. Almost every democracy in the world is a parliamentary system with three or more parties. In some cases, the parliamentary systems are 2.x parties, as in Britain. But in many cases, the parliamentary systems are half a dozen to dozens of parties who then subsequently make coalitions. This is going on in Germany right now. And so the idea of two large, dense, and relatively coherent groups that are facing off continually is an American norm that doesn't exist almost anywhere else in the world. And so Valdez has not been able to find. Some of that may be an artifact of Amazon's, particularly Amazon's political books, are such a high proportion of sales relative to Amazon in any other country. So the data sets are thinner. But even within that, what Valdez thinks this demonstrates is an aspect of American political culture that's not shared by parliamentary systems, which is the world norm.
What? There's
it's a presidential system.
Oh, right.
So the president is not, in fact, the prime minister. Right. So that's the difference in that the president is not appointed by Congress, and the congressional system. It's hard to say how much of it's the legal structure, how much of it's American tradition. But there have always been two parties, and the parties there are have only changed a couple of times. The Whigs were not a party for some time in the late 1700s, early 1800s, they've now gone away. It's been stable Republican and Democrat for a century of change. Really kind of solidified in the Civil War. But the fact that there isn't, it's not actually a multi-party democracy, it's a bi-party democracy, which is a really unusual system, and almost no other countries emulate it. We started our democracy enough earlier than the European experiments that we're actually an outlier on the political system. So what Valdez thinks this is a 250-year-old trace of the results of the constitutional system that was set up in the 1700s.
He thinks this is a trace of that?
Yes. This polarization of book recommendations, he's not been able to find in any other data set for political books for other countries.
Okay. See, I would actually find this interesting to see him doing this over the course of time, like every 4 years or
yes.
so, and stuff, and just see how that changes. Or obviously, if he didn't do this work for the last like 50 years or so, could we see
you're also only looking at the fact that it's Amazon.
Sure.
Retrieval of labels.
Sure.
The older you get, you have to go back to just like
yeah,
bookstores.
The amount of people reading books on either side is a tiny subset.
Well, yeah, right, like Americans finding China on the map. Yeah, right. We're now talking about the subset of Americans who actually read these books.
Yeah.
Which are, you know, the 10,000 people who live between here and D.C.
These samples are remarkable. If you just sort of, I mean, I love this thing because of the titles of the books. I mean, nobody in this Republican is going to read a book called Russian Liberals Being Fat Idiot. I mean, it's just stupid. Those are stupid books written for. I mean, the whole they're not even really political books. They're just
so,
kind of propaganda written specifically to a particular segmented part of the market. So
right.
The whole political books is kind of a bit of.
But so, relate that to the network. Why would you title it? Why would you write a book like Rush Limbaugh's a Big Fat Idiot?
Because you know there's 10,000 people that will buy it.
Mm-hmm. And what would happen if you made the book more modern?
You'd get less sales.
Right. Be in the middle.
Right. So in fact, the optimizing characteristic, there's potentially, and you have to design some way to look at the data set, but there's potentially a feedback loop here where the people writing the lies of George W. Bush know that title, and actually the titles are often done by the publishing panel, but they know that they're not, that there isn't a great big market for books here, right? But there is here. So if you're selling this kind of book, you're almost using the book to push the polarization. Right? The polarization exists, the books push the polarization and so on.
Well, it's a self-sustaining system. Like, I think that's why we're so stuck in this two-party system, is that it kind of feeds on itself. And then, I mean,
well,
this is just a good example of that.
We're stuck in the two-party system
for so many reasons.
Yeah.
It is deeply homeostatic. The tendency of the knowledge to preserve the two-party system, in fact, maximize it with all kinds of other things that are outside the scope of the network's life. But here, I think the fact that let's see.
It's great to see.
Nothing in the middle has one of those push and war. Right, is remarkably neutral compared to the lies of George W. Bush or Rush Limbaugh's A Big Fat Idiot. Right? So nothing in here has a polarizing name. And within the faith of George W. Bush, the French betrayal of America, you know, the official handbook of the vast right-wing conspiracy, which is presumably the preppy handbook of that. I didn't even know that would exist.
Right, this really caught my eye when you showed Red's class last year. It was the only two books I've read on that. The two I read before coming out of here, the two right in the middle. And I was trying to.
Which? Ghost Wars and
Al Shah's Map. I was really fascinated by this just because I was thinking, like, what is it? I don't know much about any of the other books in the center, but I was thinking, like, well, what is it about these books in particular that appeal to both sides? And also, I feel like I don't have very much to do with the people who read. Obviously, we're reading some of the same books. And that to me, not from a personal view, but who would I have in common, I think that's what's more interesting to me on this than all the title names on the sides are arguably ridiculous depending on which side you're looking at things.
Right. But you argue that it makes sense if the author of one side wants to recruit more audience from tries to convince the other side is true, that it would give a totally different angle to your book to appeal to that crowd, and then try to convince them through this book that actually his opinion is sort of the right one.
The system is set up that way,
there's
no need to convince. You're totally polarized, and the way that you win elections is by gerrymandering constituencies. That's how it works. It's like swing voters, which basically means where those people end up voting rather than anything else. I don't think the system as it exists now benefits at all from convincing people, getting people to read purple books that are sensible and getting them to think sensibly. And, you know, like I mean, I think any sense, like anybody who's interested in kind of politics or any kind of objective thing thinks that a book called Richard Limbaugh's A Big Fat Idiot is just as offensive.
terms of network analysis, if Ron's proposed a model for the book, which is convincing someone, and you propose a model for the book, which is essentially doubling down on loyalty, what are the characteristics of the network, of a network of political actors that would make Ron's strategy work? What would you need to be true of voters in America in terms of their identity and their position in the political network to make this strategy of, let's have a reasonable book that's advancing an idea under a title that isn't automatically polarizing?
They have to be flexible in their opinions.
And what would make these strategy work? Total inflexibility, essentially large chunks of oil.
But that's already happening in the situation, right? The general public in America is so forced, into a black and white situation or a liberal red situation that there is no gray area, there's no flexibility of mind at all. You better choose now.
Imagine anything that we can do.
let you do things like this. Because I'm hearing the message, yeah, we get it, now what? And it seems to me the background of the now what is, where are the tools? Are you all doing things like this on your own? A number of people have built projects in Flash over the years, for example, that do these kind of native spring things. Is there any place that you would like to be doing these kinds of things that you're not able to do them now? Or can you think of any place that where being able to dramatize the data set in this way is important?
What do you mean by place?
What's that?
What do you mean by place? Is there any place?
Is there any part of your experience at ITP where you come up against a data set you're looking at?
Or you've built a database somewhere. And you think, God, I wish I could do that too.
Or when you find yourself sketching this way on a piece of paper.
I mean, that's kind of a lot of what we do. I'm not saying that all databases are moved to this. I would like to see anything that I do on an everyday basis in this kind of visual structure without having to look at it in tables. So, results from maps, results from people's commentary, chats, so on and so forth, that sort of go down the way. But Wallop is doing stuff like that. But people are, I mean, it's not easy to create it. So I guess what I want to say is that we now kind of sort of go
around. Are you talking about the
you know how it's done?
Yeah, and I mean, it's not being done like so rampantly either.
Are you asking us what information you think is relevant that we can have to see visualize, or what?
No, I'm actually a much more open-ended question, right? I started this class thinking we're going to put these things up and they were going to be interesting and engaging. Instead, it's, you know, we're kind of over it. Right? So, the first question you want to ask when somebody gets over something is, are you over it like, Yeah, we get this part, we want the next step? Or are you over it like, yeah, we've looked at this, and actually it's kind of boring and not that relevant? So I'm asking, are there places at ITP where you like tools to be able to do this sort of thing? Or are there networks of, you know, and just, in fact, linked data sets, really, where you find yourself either turning to these tools or wanting to? But what I'm hearing Sean say is, you might consider that those tools aren't being made available, or, you know, you just don't have a handle on techniques for doing it.
I think I would like to see something like this in more of the live applications that we do, whether it's like a live visual application or like just thinking about like a physical computing device that we make. Like, how do people over the course of the day interact with that piece? Like, thinking about Spencer's piece, for example, like, if it didn't take more computational time away from his piece for it to also sense change in what...
Sorry, which piece? The spinning
wheels. Yeah, sorry.
What's it called?
Spin cycle. So
if
spin cycle was able to kind of track when people use it throughout the day and what kind of things they were doing with it, then as a compositional tool, you might be able, as us as creators or designers, whatever, you might be able to influence how better shape the model, or better, you know, if it's a composition, like how to compose it more interesting.
I'm more interested in that, since I think we're all having the same question of what are we going to do after ITP. I'm more interested in tracing the alumnus of ITP.
I was just about to say that.
Seeing what they are doing. Or what
that's interesting.
And then,
that's
like, and then, tracing it back to which classes they've been.
Well, you know, the sad truth would be that the core is the same, and in fact, because the classes are relatively various, there's probably not going to be as much commonality beyond the kind of 2-year window. You'll find less commonality. That's interesting.
But how are they networked with each other? Like, how many of them are connected to each other and are very close?
Yes, I was actually about to mention Anne Deng's paper. In fact, David, I'll bring it out. It was quite a nice project. She went and interviewed a bunch of alumni about how they got jobs, and it was fascinating because Anne Deng, who also did, I have to say, here I've been ragging on information visualization for my
the terrific visualization of the concordance of the Bible, the gospel, yeah, gospel spectrum of the song, which I think, you know, it was something that dramatized the data set in a way. You saw, you know, events that were covered by all four of the writers of the Christian gospel, and then things that were just mentioned by only one, and color coded and so forth. But she did this. She did the study of how to get jobs. And one of the interesting things she found is that most alumni, the place where ITP mattered most, was that alumni got their first job from ITP contacts, from the faculty or other students, but not their most recent job. So that ITP was kind of stepping stone out of the world of work, and then after that, the work network sort of took over, and then the alumni moved on. And so she was able to sort of look at, look at basically that first step. Yeah.
See, that would be more interesting also to see how it compares to other alumni networks as far as, because it's a pretty common thing for people to get jobs through just whatever network you're in. But certainly different schools have different reputations and different shares of alumni networks. And that's, I think, would make it interesting.
I'd also like to see a map of this funny thing that happened this summer where David Hyman's project with Mark Conrad, and there was like this band in New York that was doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. And then at a barbecue for work, I met the guy who was in the band, and he is the boyfriend of somebody who went to IP like 3 years ago. So it was like this weird network, and then there was like all this like speculation that whether it was stolen or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then when I finally talked to the person, I kind of like brought the two people together. Like, here is his email, and why don't you guys like talk it out and finally settle this? Because there was going back and forth between me. Me going and saying, like, I assure you nothing was stolen, they were doing it for a while now, and yeah, it was like this weird coincidence because it's such a tightly knit group, but yet ideas don't happen in a vacuum. It's floating around out there, so it would be good to have like this with all the projects and like all the attributes of a project. So it was like a visual directory of, rather than just like a database, like, okay, here's what for a certain year or something like that. So.
I thought we ought to do that for the thesis projects, because there's no one axis on which it's logical to organize theses. And so they're presented based on the cluster around the class they're in. But you would really like to be able to say, pull out the ones that use cell phones, pull out the ones that have a physical computing component, pull out the ones that are social software, and so forth. And if we could tag them, we could do this kind of ball and spring thing, where you don't set the categories in advance, you would just let the students tag them and assume that the tags will converge. It should be more like that. Yeah, I think the keyword function can be expanded, because the problem with the keyword system is that it's added by the person doing the database, and so it only reflects their view. What you'd really like is for all the students to type one another's pieces, so you get the aggregate group mind, because you all know more collectively about the thesis projects than any one of us knows, even the individual thesis instructor. And it would be really good to see what you all think is related, because you actually have a much better idea of what the underlying, you know, impetus or source for this is.
I would give that. I would give that some thought, because it's, you know, I don't know if there's any one obvious thing. I mean, one obvious thing might be just a set of interfaces, a set of callable interfaces for things like graph. The AT&T information visualization program that builds graphs like this. So you send in a data set and it sends you back a drawing. And that might be worth experimenting with.
Also, like, it's not just thesis, but general projects people want to work on. I think it happens to everyone here as they come up with an idea they present it. Sometimes, oh, blah, blah, blah is working something similar or less. It's this very informal network of how you find this information, but if there was
who says, oh, I had this cool idea, and they say, oh, somebody did that last year.
Like,
bumps out your party head, right? You have this great idea, and then you suddenly thought, oh, it's utterly unoriginal.
No.
And,
sorry.
I don't think so, because yeah, look at my work at IT, you could bin it. I'm just throwing out numbers. Like, there are, like, X number of general themes that people touch
right.
upon and
right.
spread out. So I don't think stuff is redone because no one's reinventing the wheel. The problem with the centralized thing is, like, keeping it up to date. That's why it doesn't exist, is my guess. It's a bad.
Well, it should be like a small resource, right? Rather than like who's the most original.
Yeah,
or if you did like these pods of theses, let's say each year you create all the different connections between theses, and then you like have them all stack on top of each other year after year after year. They start making connections, and you can see how how cell phone projects started, then how they build on top of it, then how did they start becoming tagging in GPS devices. So like. I mean, you can just take out an entire section and see how this one tool has been attacked every single year from different angles, and how has it been, is it flat or is it actually being grown upon, which is...
Well, this the comment about user-generated content, I think it can't come from us. I think it has to come from you all for it to be... So I think it has to stay informal, but it can stay potentially informal and measurable. It is, however, part of Rhett's... philosophy that she there's a fine balance between historical and contextual awareness and being paralyzed by the way of the past. And there's a balance that different people feel differently about it. There are some people who go much too far in the direction of knowing nothing that's gone before. But there are other people who think, well, it's already been done, so I'm not going to try it. And Red's MO is to shield people to some degree from the way of the past, because if you're going to try something today, it's going to be different even in the context of 12 or 18 months ago. And very often we've seen people go after a project three or four times in various different ways, and then one time it succeeds. For some some mix of reasons you can't quite do that.
Yeah. I was just going to say, I think this is actually a really weird year for this very phenomenon, because stage got redone. So, like, there was last year, I remember in all of these classes, like, there was always a reference to go to someone's work, it's still there on stage. And, like, this year, you can hear on the list, there's tons of first year students that are like, you know, where are these previous examples that people have, you know? So, I almost feel like, in some ways, they have, like, a better opportunity for. You know, not getting shot down, what Dory was talking about, because they can't go and like look at this project that someone made like 3 years ago, and so because they can't see it, they might be more inclined to try it.
Right.
It's not about the concept; it's also about the technology. Because I basically was able to get by sometimes, but you see that other people's blogs and journals and see like how they lie about the meat, basically.
Yeah, and I just think that's not reinventing the wheel.
That's
like they can improve on what on the past.
Just to clarify that, I don't think anyone's stuff is getting shot down by saying that. I've seen that people's stuff and building on like a knowledge base.
I think it's an interesting compare and contrast that, like, you know, people are building off of, like, each other this year. Like, first years are building off of each other this year rather than building off of previous, like, people they don't even know that just has a good blog.
Well, it's kind of questionable because I just overheard this conversation in the lab, but somebody wanted to, was like, oh, you know, this really good idea, let's make like a list into an RSS feed. And someone was like, you know, that was done in someone's thesis project, and there were a lot of questions about it, and there's a lot of documentation about it, of course, now. So there's also this point of people shouldn't necessarily believe that they're just coming up with the most novel idea.
Nowhere.
There are no original ideas.
There are no original ideas. But there are original recombinations.
Oh, yeah.
And that I think is.
But the important thing is the data must be there to be searchable.
If you're going to take advantage of it. Well, it's interesting because just yesterday morning I gave a talk at Nokia about the work that's going on here based on cell phones, because we've, you know, we've been pursuing this sort of phone as platform thing. So I showed Manhattan Dodgeball Heartbeat Optimus, Social GPS, and I wanted to show Min's garden. I don't know if you remember this thing last year. You would plant a flower on your cell phone. This is Sukhmano's thesis project. You plant a flower on your cell phone, but it was tied to the physical location, meaning you couldn't see your flower again or do things like water it or leave notes on it for other people, unless you were back in that physical location. She wore one, Lower Manhattan, with a phone writing down cell tower IDs to be able to do this. It was on stage, and it is gone. I cannot find it anywhere. Google doesn't know about it, stage doesn't know about it, and I can't, by the time I realized that I wanted to show it, I couldn't find her. So there is that. There is that bit of loss. But the idea that the loss of stage also will change the dynamics reminds me. There was a service founded by Stacey Bourne, who was class of 93, so 12 years ago. Founded a service called Echo, the East Coast Hangout. It was based on the same software as The Well, the West Coast discussion group, the mostly West Coast discussion group. There was a server crash on Echo, and they had not done tape backups. I think the server crash was on day 6, and they were on a 7-day backup cycle. So the last 6 days of conversations disappeared. When they brought the service back from tape, there were all of these conversations that had stopped a week ago, and that was what people saw when they went back into the conversations. And many of them just stopped there. And people had been getting into heated arguments, and it was like giving a child a timeout. Just like the erasure of just those last 6 days meant that those conversations didn't restart. Other conversations restarted, but went in a different direction. And then lots of new conversations started. So it was a little bit like a forest fire, kind of cleaning out the thing. I have not thought about the loss of stage, and it seems mainly to be bad to me, but it is interesting to think that we'll change the social dynamic.
By the way,
Nancy's
told me that she has access.
Right. No. In fact, she looked for me on in Min's record. I think Min had. I forget why why Nancy didn't have it there. But it is. A lot of the students who've left haven't reactivated. So without their input, it's not accessible to the current student population. But I think this idea of doing things like being able to watch and visualize the use of projects and so forth. That's interesting. It's something we'll look to for the next class.
It's kind of like the problem you were talking about with archival, just archiving period, like 50 years down the road, like what format will be around then.
Yes.
This is switching gears a little bit. What I would like to see visualized is not specifically how people got jobs, more from a biographical perspective, what people's interests were, and how they were able to develop that, like what their career path was, but not specifically the job, focusing more on their interests. Because I think like you can save a lot more time by having previous interest with someone that has already down the road.
Yeah, most graduate schools are funnels. People come from all over, and then they leave as a stream, right? Everybody's a doctor, everybody's a lawyer. ITP is an hourglass. People come from all over, there's the neck of the hourglass, everybody spends this sort of two-year experience, and then they go back out all over. I mean, it's crazy where the graduates end up. So it would be interesting to...
So how many people go back to the city exactly?
Yeah, that's so long.
Well, there's an interesting pattern there that a significant number of people go back into the field they went into, but they do it one of two ways. Either they go back into film but are now working on something more interactive and nonlinear, right? So they've used this to actually alter their position within the industry. And then there are a number of people who discover a taste for kind of aesthetic creation that isn't necessarily tied to revenue, isn't obviously tied to revenue. And they go back to the job because they're going to get a raise from the work they've done here, but
is the easiest way to pay the bills while they're figuring out what they want to do. So what we actually see is people come in, they work here, they go out and get a job doing what they're doing because it's the easiest, it's the easiest slot. And then 2 years later, they're doing something radically different. You know, ITP is a left-hand turn for everybody. Right? There's people you knew in college where you would just say, and then obviously they went to law school, and then obviously they went to college. No one would ever say of anyone, and then obviously they went to ITP. And so right, there is this kind of, you know, part of the goal here is to give you a good environment which to be struck by lightning, but you never know exactly when or how that's going to happen. And that means that the predictability of walking out of here into, oh yes, then I got a job in a law firm, doesn't really exist. With, you know, modular, the sole exception of RGA, which is probably the largest single intake job, yeah, exactly. But it's almost the trajectory, I would think, sort of 5 years out of ITP rather than first job out of ITP that's more indicative of the breadth of place of people. Which touches on the social networks, which we'll get to a couple of weeks from now. But I will, yeah, this has been very helpful, thank you, because it's, you know, I have not understood something that you all have already internalized about information visualization, and I appreciate knowing that because I can handle it differently. And I will look for places where we can make those resources available to you within the program. We'll see how we can set up something where if there's some basic visualization tools that will be called. So let me pass this out, switching gears. This is the beginning of the midterm assignment. And what I'm going to ask you to do is to design and then build a network of any sort. It has to have certain characteristics which are listed here, but I'll give you a kind of generic description. It's in two parts. One part you'll present next week, which is, what do you think you're going to build? And then the following week, we'll go over the whole class discussing the results of that. The network should be small enough that you can build it and execute it in relatively short order. Do not do anything grandiose. Networks exhibit complex effects even at small scale. Do not think you need to build something large. The internet itself started with four nodes, so you can start small and still get complex. The other is, I would encourage you not to build it on the computer in the same way that we did our postcard network and it illustrated the principles of packet switching, but it didn't use anything electronic. You're welcome to do it on the machine if you like, but I think that building on top of various physical and social networks may give you a better view as to what it is, what it is you need to do. So give this a read, and then let's talk about this for a moment. Oh, I'm sorry. Sure. it's simple and observable. And this is the next step after what you did in your papers, which is to look at a network and describe it. Now it's to describe a network and build it. And it can be, you know, I mean, think how simple that postcard network was, right? Just stamps, a piece of paper, some addresses, and a very simple protocol, which we invented in class for ordering, you know, A through B1 through 5. And yet, it led to some relatively complicated effects, right? It led to, you know, at what rate are things moving through the system? You can see the hump and then the tail of, you know, when the cards arrive. And that was enough. It does not need to be more complicated than that. All it needs to be is complicated to flush out some unpredictable effects in the operation. What I want you to do for next week is to just come in with a description of what you'd like to do. There's some basics here you need to answer. And I want you to come in with a picture of the network. And by pick, I'll shoot the picture in quotes. Don't use Illustrator. Do use McDonald's placements, that kind of thing. You know, I want it to be an organic sketch, not a clean, pristine diagram. You can model it with Play-Doh. You can model it with pipe cleaners. But show me what it is you'd like to build. Degrees of centralization and decentralization, where the nodes are, how the addresses are going, and so forth. It can be as diagrammatic or as kind of holistic as you like. We've seen a bunch of different examples today. I don't want, you know, obviously the level of the kind of detail, no. But you've seen different layers, different amounts of detail in these presentations. Bring in something that you can put on the wall of class next week that we can all look at to get a sense of what you're up to. And let me add one more stricture. No text on the diagram. No explanations, no visual, no verbal explanations. Because people have a tendency to underdraw and over-label. And I really want you to go through the experience of trying to make a visual representation that makes sense of what it is. What it is you're looking at.
Can you do a verbal for the weekend or a verbal for the next week?
No, all I want next week is the description of what you're going to do. In the following week, you'll execute it, and then in weeks, after next class, you'll actually execute the network and see what happens. And then present your results in class. And all of class number 7 will just be given over to, just be given over to presentation. Yes.
So this network that needs to run its course within a week.
Yes, that's right. That's the other question. Should it run relatively quickly? So if you're going to do a postal network, it should be, you know, local rather than international. If you're going to do you know, some other network that has long term characteristics, make sure that it's exiting. And really, you know, you will serve yourself well, I think, if you pick relatively simple primitives, which is to say things like postcards, and relatively simple is not the ideal situation. Actually, would be to have a network. You don't have to do this, but it's possible if you know it's not a simple enough one to run it two different times with different parameters, right? And see what happens. And I don't want to say too much about it because I don't want to prejudice what the design questions are. If you have, you know, as you're narrowing in on things, drop me a line and let me know what you're up to, and I will I'll try and get back to you. About that. Again, I apologize for not being responsive to the questions about the cyber geography reading, but I will think about designing a network. I will say most of that. So it's fairly abstract in one way, right? The design parameters are quite open, but both the bottleneck of simplicity, I mean, to be a fairly strict one. And also the size, right? Should not be dozens and dozens of nodes. It should be, you know, enough to give you some sense of how the network will work. The other key thing besides the visual some data prediction about the number of elapsed days until half the network was delivered, right? And the group average was roughly close to that dimension. That's the kind of thing I want you to do for this network. Tell me something you think will happen when it runs. Is it going to succeed some of the time and fail some of the time? Is it going to run fast or slow? Et cetera, et cetera. So are there questions about that?
Yes. If there are any relationship between wait time and final?
That's a very good question. There can be, but there doesn't have to be. The final project is a, I'll say a little bit about this now just because it's the final project is a project of your own devising. It can be a project or a paper. So I've had people do just an analysis of an existing network as a written document. I've also had people build and observe networks in the manner of the midterm, but with greater complexity, right? So designing a network with multiple parameters and varying those parameters. I had someone design once a game that was played on a kind of network grid where moves on the game would actually have effects across the network, and get several of his friends over. They played the game several times, adjusting the rules every couple of games to observe some patterns. So anything in that spectrum is acceptable, whether you want to do something written or something where you create and observe it. I want to emphasize, you know, ITP is obviously artifact culture. We think best when there's something we're instantiating and looking at. I want to emphasize that the construction aspect of this is not like a PCOM class. I'm not going to grade anything having to do with the physical operation of your network. What you're doing is you're trying to create a situation which you yourself can observe. So the output of this is going to be what it is you've thought and have to say about the networks. The design of the thing itself is input. That's true of both the midterm and the final. I have had people do midterm networks and get interested enough in the effects they exhibit to say, I want to do that again, I want to double down on that for my final. And I'm gonna figure out the actual details I want to vary. And that's worked quite well. But again, it's not a requirement. Since the class is a survey and we ripped through a lot of different things trying to kind of relate them to one another, I'm assuming that each of you is seeing things that we're talking about over the space of an hour or two. You think, wow, I'd really like to dig into that. So hang on to those things because those, the final rather, is the place to bring that stuff back into back to there. And the second paper, the paper that's now the paper we just did, is that will actually be the design document for your final. So you'll have some time to kind of think through it before you get there.
You mentioned that to be able to play a game, would a game would be considered a network?
No. A game is only a network if it is a network, which is to say, checkers is not a network because the underlying forces are purely local between the pieces.
Checkers are the red.
Or chess, actually, because the underlying forces are purely local. But what this dude did was he took the idea of Chinese checkers, and he actually made the routes variable. So there were some routes where you could move faster and some routes where you could move slower, but the risk of collision was higher in the faster routes. So then you are making network calculations because the underlying board is not... The underlying board is creating variability as opposed to for the routes. Whereas for chess, the underlying board is doing nothing but separating black from white. So, let me make sure I get this right because I don't want to. Yes. Blackjack is not a networked game. Bridge is a network game. Bridge is a very, very tiny network, so maybe not so interesting. Bridge is the one where people are playing in pairs. So what you had, the cards you have are seeing affect what I have and seeing affect the people we're playing against. And it's that second characteristic, the difference between blackjack, which is just you either have 21 or not, and other people, you know, you are either over or under 21, and there's just kind of a ranking, which is much closer to rolling dice. Whereas bridge actually has strategy that's played in two very tiny intersecting networks. So a very small subset of games are networks, but games are an interesting way to explore networks if you design them right.
Couldn't Blackjack be a network game if you took into account the multiple games without a reshuffle? Like, because then the cards are being lessened, and so if people are counting cards,
If you don't reshuffle so that it's not random each time, the second game of Blackjack is affected by the first game. That's closer to a network. But it's not, you're still not playing network strategy, in a way. And so it's, you would have to design the game to actually fulfill those requirements, but it's certainly possible.
We need to optimize the strats at the bottom of the ship.
It's kind of right, for the card counting. But even then, the network effects are fairly thin. I want you to focus on something where you can actually see something moving through the network and see the ways that the different characteristics of the network affect the movement. So this Chinese checkers game took regular Chinese checkers and said, the two changes we're going to make are we're going to make routing and collisions a variable on the board. Suddenly the way the pieces were moving, and then the players were trying to discover strategies about, I can move more quickly through the center, but my piece has a greater likelihood of collision, which is not a characteristic that exists in regular Chinese checkers. And a collision, I think, would not be that one space, I forget where it was. So suddenly, you could take the many hop network around the outside edge of the board, or you could try and rush through the center, or balance them, and then the underlying network became something that people were strategizing. Any other questions about the midterm? Next week is just the theoretical piece. Come in with an idea of what you're doing, put up a picture of what you're doing, and be ready to make a couple of predictions about when you build it, it will have these characteristics. And actually, let me even raise the drop me a line thing. Send me mail letting me know as you're thinking about what it is you're doing. If you have a question about it, I'll ask the question. But I've decided, at least let me know. And then if there's something we need to start a conversation about, we will. And the final thing I'll say is, everybody got your papers back. They're in my box by Gloria's desk if you didn't. And thank you for that. It was actually quite interesting to read. I apologize again for not having gotten back to you quickly. As I said, I have an unlimited rewrite policy, and I sign short papers and try and make the comments in the direction of changes. In the hopes that, as in the real world, first drafts, you almost never do writing that goes straight from your pen to, the front page of the newspaper or whatever. And if you'd like to do it again, I'd like to read it again. So I'd encourage you to at least, think about it as you write the paper, because the hurdle of work, it's always the case in the second draft, the hurdle of work, the hurdle of value is actually considerably in your favor rather than the first draft. So, and if you have any questions about the comments, obviously dropping lines. And I realize the readings are sitting in my box up in front. So here's one where I get them, and then we'll be.
Turning our attention next week to the mysteries of scale.
to the ways in which large networks are different than small networks. I've done a lot of hand-waving about how they're more complex. We're actually going to talk about the ways in which they're more complex and how to think of it. There's two handouts, one called Linked, one called 6 Degrees. There's a third reading, that's Sneaky Exponential, which is the link is on the syllabus. So read that, and I'll see you all next Thursday. No, they're making the rounds different.
Rich said you were just getting ready your tickets for the playoffs until the World Series just completed.
Yeah. I wanted to skip your room.